Monday morning, you know.
Tuesday.
People like, is it Tuesday? I thought it's a Monday. Although I thought it was Blue Monday. No, they say it's a Tuesday. It's a midweek already. That's a good one. let me welcome the honorable members present. We're glad you're here this morning so that we can move on with our work. I'm having one apology from Mr. Tao. He is not well. He was involved in a car accident, so he must still consult with doctors. And Mr. Watson extended an apology for late coming, caught up in a heavy traffic. We hope he will join us while we are moving home. If there are any other apologies, could be extended then, so that we hear. Honorable Trumbok is here.
Thanks, Jim. Honorable Watson will be a little bit late. It's always in traffic.
Okay, I already announced that. Thank you. You welcome Honorable Combo. And we also want to welcome our staff, welcoming other stakeholders present here, those are having interest in this work. Then we welcome the department, probably under the leadership of the DDG, but they will announce who they are and what size is the team, so that then we can kick off after that. On this briefing by the Department of Land Affairs on their OTIF to serve a land of reform. I hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Apologies for the delay. We went through the brief action and we finally found our system and the team here. My name is Jose Kwanya. I'm the Chief Land Planning Commissioner and also acting Director General for the Department of Land Affairs. So I'm leading the team and let me introduce the team. I will ask them to introduce themselves. I'll start from DDG and Mr.
Thank you, Chair. Introduce Shabani, Deputy Director General.
I'm Pepin Kusi. Pepin Kusi, I'm the acting Chief Financial Officer.
I'm Arthur from Spartan, acting DDG for Corporate Services.
Monche, I'm Derek Clark, Chief Director of Service and Acting. I'm standing for Dr. Makamele, Deputy Director General of the
I would not introduce our Parliament because
they are
here all the time.
Thank you very much. We're glad that you are here this morning to report to us about the annual report that transpired during the current year. Without wasting any time, may I allow you to kick the dust?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. This is our annual report for the year ended 31st March 2007. The purpose of this presentation is to, in line with the requirement, present this report to the Select Committee. on land and environment affairs. The purpose of the strategic context in which we are operating is that we are contributing to the SDGs objectives, where we would like to contribute to poverty alleviation, to economic growth and development, to creating jobs through this program that we are running, to improve the quality of life of our people and to bring them capacity to be able to deal with some of the issues that relate to the transfer of the land. I will jump the slide that talks to the core objectives, because you have been we have taken you through this objective. They remain the same for this year under review. For program one, which deals with administration and human resources, we have the organizational structure for the department. We have finalized the organizational structure, and we have the minister has approved that organizational structure recently, and we are presenting it to the EPSA. Basically, what is the structure that we need to improve the capacity of the department to deliver? And for that reason, we have to look at getting additional staff to be able to deliver to scale. So that has been done, and the human resource management plan has been finalized, and now we are at the stage of looking at how we are going to roll it out, given that the structure, so that the structure of the department has been finalized. We have done the citizen charter, which was we were requested to the bottom in the previous session. We are contributing to improvement of service delivery in the area of land, and we have prepared that SDIC report service delivery improvement plan. We have submitted it as required to our principal. One of the important issues is that we have to ensure that there is skills development if we are going to have effective implementation of the agrarian program. We have entered into a memorandum of understanding with the University of Fort Hare to do training in the Eastern Cape, but they can undertake this for all the provinces. They have designed a particular program which would benefit the land reform beneficiaries. We have agreed to have a battery scheme, which is going to ensure that we develop the desired skills here. So challenges are around surveyors, geometrics, and land information management, and the training program are saying that we need to develop that capacity and grow our own trade. But our establishment shows that we've got a 27% vacancy rate. That is the number of posts that we have, 4,000 posts, but we currently have 3,228 posts that have been filled, and 1,219 posts that are vacant. The next slide shows that trying to fill these vacant posts has been an interesting exercise, where we find that we are like filling a bottomless pit or a leaking bucket. We have made appointments, advertised posts, appointed about 850 people. But some of those people have left the department. In other words, when we had 1,045 vacancies, we appointed 850 people, but some of those people have left because of internal promotion. It's not just promotion, it's just that when people apply for posts, those who are planners apply for senior posts within the department. So about 396 people have done that, and this is not a sign only in this department. We have seen it seems to be a sign across government departments. where you apply, you advertise food and Dublin Tavern apply, and you don't have the interest of getting new people into the establishment. So they've also transferred. These are not transfers as in transferring people to other departments, but people who resign from the Department of Land Affairs and go to other departments, under 1099 of those people did that. And there are retirements, deaths, and resignations. So what we had, the gap that we have filled with 850 votes and new appointments has been affected negatively by these resignations. So which leaves us with still 10-20 votes that are still vacant, despite that effort. So that those are the challenges that we're having in trying to build in capacity here. We do have other programs, the project of recruitment, where we are trying to fast-track the recruitment process. The program of internship, which is a government-wide program, we have a number of people that have come to the department for training. Of course, some of the challenges is the placement around these internship programs. We do have a quarter scheme that are supporting for that. One exciting program for us, which is an innovation, is the graduate program. The graduate program is an initiative where we are recruiting people and give them four-year contracts at the entry level. And during that period, we train them on various aspects of our land reform program. After that four-year program, we are able to say that we have grown our own tree. Because there is this problem that we don't have people who have got the required experience, so we cannot feed post because we don't have people who have got experience. So what we have decided is that we're going to take quite a significant number, this 150 or 450 graduates that we want to take as they come and unemployed, we put them onto the department on a four-year contract, post them to various units, directorates in the department, and then make sure that after the 4 years, they can work with the experience that they have in the various programs. So we think that this program is even much better than the internship program. The policy unit, which is linked to the department, to the Office of the Director General, is focusing on policy issues. They have looked at the land summit recommendation and they've worked on some of those issues that relate to that. The product that comes from that is that units include the ownership of land by foreigners. In this regard, we have produced a report. On the foreign ownership of land by foreigners. We have circulated that report from the panel of experts. The issue that we are focusing on now, on that foreign ownership of land, is the issue of developing a policy. The cabinet has approved that we must focus on development policy and ensuring regulation of the regulation that that kind of ownership of land by foreigners. So now, after we have received the report, our focus is to write a very careful policy that will talk to issues of procedure, issues of criteria that will be used, issues of regulation that will be relevant to be good. We will be consulting the cabinet settlement with an inter-ministerial task committee that is going to work on the development of that policy as well as legislation that relates to ownership of land by foreigners. We'll develop a land tax discussion paper and we've developed a winning buyer, winning seller principle discussion paper, and we are contributing to the new expropriation bill, which is led by the Department of Public Works. We are during this year under review. We have had the chief registration amendment bill and personal title amendment bill to come act of parliament. I will talk to the full government support. Let me jump straight to the program two, which is survey and mapping. In this chief directorate, we have made significant progress in terms of support to land reform programs to the redistribution and restitution in terms of support them for the survey as well as the restoration of land parcels which come from those programs. We've also focused on the contributing to the African agenda with the development of projects from NEPA by engaging the Mapping Africa for Africa and African Preference Framework project. We have looked at the National Control Survey System, which has been made available to clients 99% of the time in the reporting in the year under review. We have looked at the National Mapping Program, which intended to produce 1,620 maps, and we are making significant progress in that regard. We're also talking about supporting the vulnerable groups by producing visually impaired maps for visually impaired people. We are also proud to say that we have made significant progress in the cadastral information system, which has enhanced to increase the efficiency of service delivery. Support to the land reform and restitution program has been seen in this year under from this unit. In terms of spatial planning, we are saying that we have seen the growth patterns after 1994, which are a serious concern that it seems to be in line with the spatial planning of the country. We would like to make sure that we make contribution in terms of reviewing this and seeing what changes can be made in spatial planning in the country. We are finalizing the development of the land use management bill, LAM, and we are at the final stages. It will be coming to yourself and for public comment. The multi-purpose community centers have been one of the areas where we have been trying to ensure that there is the presence of the Department of Land Affairs in those MCCs. In terms of support, we are trying to improve on our support specifically institutions like the Provincial Development Tribunal, like the South African Council of Planners. We are providing technical support where necessary. One of the challenges for this branch as a whole is the inability to recruit trained staff in all of the units. We're having a challenge to recruit surveyors, people with information, I mean with technical knowledge in the various fields of spatial planning, cadastre, and survey and mapping. This challenge is a challenge which has been going year on year, and this is why we believe that we must grow our own trees with the batteries that we have looked at in order to ensure that we meet we address this challenge. We stay funding for the acquisition of imagery is not cool to make the most economic use of it, but spread in more or less open and transparent manner over a number of departments of agencies, thus preventing the organization fulfilling its legal mandate. We will be engaging with National Treasury and the Parliamentary Committee in this regard. In Program 7, which deals with registry, we are trying to bring ourselves close to the people by establishing these offices closer to the people and move away from the apathy structure of having these offices in line with the previous network capacity of the time. So we have made some intense progress in this regard, established this office in Nelspring, and we are considering other processes. We are still working on the e-cadastre. Still a challenge to work on the manual system, so we would like to go electronic. There is a review that will happen in the new process. We are awaiting a report that report is due to be presented to the minister next Monday, which will talk to some of the changes that need to happen in this area of on the commission, about 74,574 claims have been settled out of the 79,696 claims. So we have made the mark of 93% of the claims that have been settled. But this remainder of the claims, which is about 5,000 claims, is the most difficult part of restitution. It has been a challenge, and the challenges still remain those that relate to the high land prices, the resistance from the current land owners who are opposing claims on the basis of validity, that the claims are not valid. So those are the challenges that are facing the restitution claims, and this may result from claims that are taken to the land claim court, which may not be settled next year, the president is directing. So these are the challenges that we are having around this. For what the progress that we have made is that for this year under review, we have settled 2,786 of which 706 were rural claims, which is a significant achievement actually. We have delivered 579,000 hectares of land in this year under review. The issues of transfer of state land are some of the challenges where they are delayed. We have got the agreement to hand over that land to the people, but the actual transfer of the land, the registration of the land, has been delayed because of some of the challenges that are related to the land transfer to state land. It relates to the long process that relates to the transfer of land to probably state to the new land company. We have seen the benefit to vulnerable groups from the restitution program, but in our statistics we have registered that 40% of the restitution beneficiaries are female aided households. We are observing that the number of households are female headed, and this increase has been over the past 3-4 years. We have done an evaluation of 324 projects where we found that about 47% were pure agricultural projects. Others, the remainder were mixed projects in housing, other mining projects, forestry projects. But most of them were, the biggest category was 47% in this agricultural projects. With those projects, we have seen 1,108 permanent jobs created, and 2,725 temporary jobs, and 275 people who are benefiting terms of training. In that analysis, that is what that evaluation has shown. It addresses the issue which is used as a end clause, if you like, that land reform projects are going to revamp into the loss of jobs. This project shows that the people are still employed and those projects are still running. We take it as a threat that people will lose jobs as a result of the land reform program. Challenges that we are dealing with is that in the rural area, the nature of the project is such that there are many challenges by its very nature. Some of the land has not been surveyed, so we've got to map and take a long procedure to determine and link the people to the land that they have been, that was deadlocked, where they are disputes with the current landowner, disputes with claimant communities around boundary, as who is the rightful traditional leader, and the issue that some of the traditional leaders want the land to register in their own name and not in the name of the community, high land costs. Those are some of the challenges that relate to them. We have developed strategies to address each of these challenges so that we can be able to address the program. In terms of the other land reform program, the total size of land that was restored so far is 4 million hectares, 1.1 million hectares. This includes land delivered through redistribution, which is 2.2 million hectares, and through restitution, which is about 1.8 million hectares. But the 30% target of 85 million is about 25 million. So 4 million is a token option in terms of the 25 million hectares that still need to be satisfied. So this is why many people are complaining that land reform is too slow. 4 million industrials is regarded as quite slow. In terms of the redistribution program, we have delivered about 258,485 hectares over the year under review, against the target of 2.5 million. We've got a gap of 17 million hectares that we should be delivering up to 20. It's a very high demand. But what we've seen over the years is that when we compare the budget against the hectares that we've delivered, we have seen that there has been an increase in the budget of land affairs. The blue bar there represents the baseline, the budget, and the pink one represents the number of hectares. This comparison shows that in year 2002, the amount of land that we bought was much higher, even though the budget was still small at that time. As the budget increased, you can see that there is a decrease in the number of hectares that were bought for the amount that was more. And in 2004, those prices of land, the increase in land prices, showed that the more the budget, the lesser the number of hectares that we are buying. And the evidence of this is particularly clear in the restitution program. We used to buy land at 3,000 per hectare. And over the past 3 years, when we bought land in Libobo, and we bought land in Tembus, in Komati Park area in Mpumalanga, and we bought land in the coastal areas, the sugarcane farms in Kizerland. The land per hectare, the cost of land per hectare was about 55,000 rand in those areas. which then gave us an annual average of 35,000 rand per hectare. So this is indicating that the land prices are increasing, and that for the same number of hectares that we would buy, we would need a bigger budget to buy that land. This is true for land reform, but it is also true if you look at the land for residential purposes in the urban centers. The price of land is getting higher. In terms of the tenants, labor tenants, there have been a number of claims, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga provinces, where we've got labor tenants claims. We did not go to court. We had thought that there would be about 700 claims that we could labor tenants claims, but we did not go to court. So the sign of success, or at least there have been no problems that went to court over the year and the week. But with those that have been in court already, we have been increased the legal representation. We've got a process which is talking to increasing the support to those people who are victims of eviction on farms. Well, the focus has been on the number of cases that are in court around eviction. We have an increasing cry over eviction from many people who say that they are being evicted. And those matters may not be in court. Last week we were in KZN, and the KZN leadership gave us about 11 of the 25 cases that they have reported where people living on farms were abused. They gave a story of a child who was burned. Almost 90% of his body was burned in that farm. And there were two boys that were beaten from 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And one of those boys decided to commit suicide because the landowner had said, I have beaten you from 8 this morning to 5. I am tired of beating you. I'm going to rest now. I'm going to meet tomorrow. I'm going to continue to beat you. And then that boy, during that break, he decided to untie himself and go and hang himself and wrote a note that said he cannot take it anymore. And the other one who remained is the one who told the story, and that matter is caution. There are many issues that are not recorded in the maximum court. The Human Rights Commission is having hearings tomorrow and the day after tomorrow just to listen to some of the cases. Even though their focus is out there, they are also getting some of this too. So this matter has been a serious matter of concern. It doesn't want to go away. On the part of the department, we have engage the services of the Royal Legal Trust, which is going to beef up the legal representation of the of this war affected. We're engaging the Department of Justice to look at strategies of how they can use their outreach program to provide legal assistance to those victims of these addictions. We have bought some land for those people who are living on farms, and we, through the program that we are engaged in as a focus, IJIMA project, we are trying to look at the hotspot area where we can buy land and get those people living on farms some land so that we can improve their sustainability. So this program is going to see a delivery of the number to cover that. We did talk about SPV in our previous discussions. We have reviewed this matter. We have looked at it with the comments from cabinet and others who advise us that it's not acceptable to establish new parastatal systems. to make a cost efficient fleet, we must consider the use of the current vehicles. And we are reviewing that proposal. It will be an instrument of vehicles to ensure that the fast track decision level. We have looked at the issues of decentralization in order to fast track service delivery in land, and this strategy helps to bring in capacity to even at the district level in terms of dealing with the adaptation program. The issue of state land is still one of the issues that is challenging for us. We have looked at policies investing in state land, which would fast-track the program of vesting, and therefore the program of vesting taking transfer of the land so people not stop the state land. The state land, as we have indicated before, the one that can contribute to land reform is less than 1.2 million hectares. So it's not too much land that is available for registration under state land. Only about less than 1.2 million. So if you are saying that we must use state land to address 5 million, it will not make a significant contribution. Most of the land in the country stays in private hands. So that's why we're saying that it will be the redistribution of 30% of the private owned land in the country. We are working with the Department of Public Works to review and improve the system of the transfer of the land of state land incorporating this transfer of state land to the provincial state land disposal committee are the ones that need to be oiled so that the processes to take land through that machine is going to be faster. We are working on that. In terms of financial performance, the department has the graph shows that in 2002 our expenditure was 99% of the budget. In 2004 it was 97%, and in 2025 it was 98%. We had a dip in 2005 and 2006, but largely because of the restriction program for funds that were earmarked for development post-settlement support, where there was a delay in the implementation of those development projects, and that resulted in us not spending about 1 billion range in that year of 2005 and 2006. So there was a dip in expenditure. But this year, 2006, which is the year under review, we have spent about 99.9% of our budget. And the following slide shows the actual allocation for the department. But in 2005-2006, we had a 3.9% allocation. And in 2006-2007, we had a 3.7% allocation. And the expenditure was 3.7 billion in GTA, which left us less than 1%, of our budget. And those unspent funds for 4 million we could have used, but it would have led us to overspending, which National Treasury is not taking time. The annual report shows that we had a qualification between last year. And that qualification from the Auditor General relates mainly to the and those are the asset management related to the asset register for all the assets that are owned by the department, as well as the rental revenue received from leased land, the state land that is of lease. In terms of asset management, the issues there were that the assets were not located, could not be verified physically. The asset register did not comply with the minimum requirements for the asset management guidelines given by Treasury. And the root cause for this was that
we took over assets where there were no clear numbering of the assets and verification of the assets. There were no very clear policies around that asset management. But when you look at the issues of procedure and policies that relate to this, there was no capacity to do that asset management in this market. The interventions have been that we have in all of the offices set up a system to reconcile these assets, to classify the property capture, and look at all the verification systems to ensure that we are able to take stock of all the assets that are owned by this company. We are going to clean up the register and ensure that they reflect the true records. We've got a lot of assets, and we think that it may take a year or more to be able to correct this. So it's quite a challenge because the system was not very clear before. I think it's likely because most of the government departments have not been using the balance sheet like the private sector does. And now we are getting into the culture of developing a very clear balance sheet for the government, just like the private sector does. So for that reason, this item is a challenge to the department. But our view is that it should be on top of it. We will make significant inroads this year. This current year, to be able to address that. In terms of the rental revenue received from this land, the finding was that we did not have complete information on all the leases. Let me say that we do have land that is under the Department of Land Affairs, but we also have the land that is under the power of attorney run by the province. The MSC, the minister gave power of attorney to the MSC to run some of the state land. So the asset register should, the lease register should look at those leases that are under the Department of Land Affairs and those leases that are under the power of attorney in the province. It was shown that we don't have accurate information on this list. And even that which we have is incomplete. The root cause of that was lack of approved policies to govern the relationship between the revenue received and the amount collected from the provinces. There was no clear policy on how that is going to be done. There was lack of a complete database or register of leased land. Didn't know which properties were, who is actually in that property, staying in that property. And there was a lack of a data management system, who is owing how much of those vendors, inadequate contract management. Those were some of the items that we identified. So what we're doing is that we have looked at institutionalizing the management of the state land leases. And so far what we've done is we've created 49 posts for the provincial land reform office, so that in each of them there are officials whose focus is going to be on lease management. And we are going to look at something like a debt collection system, so that we can make sure that whoever has got each property has got a current lease and is a specific method of collecting the lease from those people who are benefiting from the property. And we are setting up systems to integrate the revenue collection with the provincial department of the country. With those qualifications, we identified that we are doing our best to address the issues that the auditor general has raised.
The issue of both segment support has been a critical issue in all of the programs, the restitution, redistribution, and tenure reform. And our view is that we need to get a system that is going to ensure that we provide effective settlement support, implementation of successful land and agrarian reform program, so that we can contribute to the reduction of poverty and enhance the livelihoods and security and boost economic growth to enable security of Kenya and sustainable land use. So we think that both settlement supports should actually look at this issue. And we say that this cannot be done by the Department of Land Affairs alone. We need other government departments to participate and to contribute, for example, to the skills development, to ensure that there is development around running of businesses, because some of these land reform projects transfer assets which are commercial assets to those people. So we need to ensure that they are capable people and they are robust institutions for support for those land reform benefits. On the other hand, we do have legislation that is important on the manner in which we should be doing this. And one of those is the environmental legislation and township legislation, in other words, land use management, which will talk to the manner in which we use the land for settlement as well as for agricultural purposes. The issue there is the optimal use of the natural resources. Whichever use that goes to the level of the beneficiary provide on, we need to ensure that that particular use has got a support system from the various government departments. The land reform sector plan must actually take a significant part and priority in the IDPs of the municipalities in terms of their special planning, in terms of their implementation of development. We are saying the Department of Agriculture in the provinces have got a very critical role. Even GTI, we have some of the programs and the projects have to do with trade, like in Limpopo we are talking about the export of citrus fruits in the Vajiana, in KZN, in the Winner region. We are talking about export of citrus fruits. Even in domestic markets, like banana estates in Pumalang. So it is important that the Department of Trade and Industry will actually assist in the support for the agricultural industry, so that the agriculture industry can improve its contribution to the GDP in the country. With this, what we are saying is that we cannot run it alone as the Department of Land Affairs. Our program requires support from other government departments as well as the private sector to support the land reform beneficiaries. So both government support is very important for us. In fact, we do have a process which I would like to share with you, which is the product of the work that we have done consulting with various government departments on the elements of the post-settlement support, how that should be done generally. And in conclusion, Chairperson, we are saying we have done what we could in the year under review. We may have had some achievements in those areas that we have done, but this has not been without, without challenges. Clearly, there is a slow pace of land we concede that there is a slow pace of land delivery given the target that we've got. But we're saying we can improve on it. We have worked, we have agreed with the minister on the GGMA strategy to improve on our performance. Each of the units in the department has outlined what it is that they are going to do in order to improve on this slow pace of land reform. We need more resources. As I indicated, the land prices are increasing well, if we're going to deliver more like that, it means we need more resources for that. We've worked out that even this year, we need more resources. The restitution budget is almost completed. We are sitting at November, but the restitution budget program has gone beyond 70% in the expenditure, and we need more resources for that. We know the other programs, we think that it's going to be very critical, particularly for the net MTF, that the resources for the reverse allocation for the equipment is reduced significantly, and that the baseline significantly shifts from the current baseline that we have. Both for the forest restitution as well as for the other land reform program. We have agreed with the Department of Agriculture that we need to work closely, particularly on both segments of support, not only with agriculture, but even with the provinces. In our forum of the MINNET, the Minister and the MEPs, we have agreed that we need to work more closely to get and coordinate the support. To end my presentation, I say it can no longer be business as usual. We need to work harder and work even more harder. The solution path must be walked as well as possible. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Reading on the report, I think the members have been listening. Welcome to you at Western. We put in heritage subject as presented. Honorable Reed, Honorable Sambo, Honorable Sambay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, may I take the opportunity of thanking Mr. Boyner for the presentation he made. Though in his closing remarks, he adds a quote to the book that there are people who are still flogging their employees. And a person stands beside and says, I'm now going to rest, and I will continue the next day. And if that case is still in the pipeline, I would like to know how big is that pipe, how long is that pipe, and what has been happening. And thanks for bringing this to our notice. Those of us who serve in the safety and constitutional affairs would like to get the case number so that we can follow up this matter. And that person should not actually enjoy the privileges and the rights and the human rights of our country if we still have such a people. My question says, though I have a bit of limited time, as I said to you, that I'll be leaving very soon, it is a question that arises on strategic context. Enhanced access and or ownership of the land by people living in farms and improve their livelihood in economic opportunities. It's well said. But I think there's also another strategy on the other side. The farm owner are working very fast to get rid of these people before you make sure that they also are in the shell in those land which they have actually so wet. Adding to that, you make mention of the willing buyer and willing seller. It looks like that concept is not working. If we look at this, the way we move. Those people have bought that land next to nothing. And I'm sure the turnover, they must have now actually received what they have actually spent when buying that land if they did not get it free. The other question, sir, arises on the administration office and director general policy unit. Sir, I don't know how far are we with this policy. Whether are we achieving anything? If there's anything that we are achieving on this policy, I would like to see probably the example, if of course they have that. And the last one, come also on the calculation settlement. I agree, much has been done, and the remaining of these 5,000 claims, I understand what the commission is saying. But is it not the way probably we should now put a table that we will have expropriate if people are not agreed? The reason behind this, I'm not trying to be harsh. You find that the owner of the land now, today, it is the son or the grandson of that owner. Or is the person who bought the land from the previous. And because they think that the government has got money, now they must now make money out of that. If I had time, I would make an example in the Free State where we wanted to buy a farm. The person started looking at it, what? GEE? What are we talking about? How much do you have? They're not interested in helping, but they're interested in, because they said, make me an offer so that if I go here, I don't have to come back to the government or to anybody else to get it. Now, you can look at that people are not actually willing to come down. Those are the questions that I wanted to look at. The 5,000, they have to look at it in that direction of appropriation.
Followed by Honorable William and Honorable. Thanks, Chief. I'm still recovering from Honorable Mzizi's opening comment. I actually thought we had a constitution in this country, and if there was a problem with our criminal justice system, that the victims have no rights to complain to criminals. But now I see some criminals actually will have their human rights stripped away from them. That's fine. Okay. Can I just ask the notes that we were presented today by the DG? We don't have that with us. We have different documents. And there's a wealth of information that's been presented to us, particularly the graphs and the figures. My notes that I was given for this meeting is purely a narrative. I really like to have those figures and those. Okay, it gives me, thank you very much. Right, so that's all about. Okay, I have three questions I'd like to ask. The first one is the issue of the willing buyer, willing seller, which was mentioned earlier this morning. I'd like to know just exactly what is the department putting forward. This is what we've heard before, in that we're going to be reassessing that there should be, in fact, a willing seller, which I have heard in the pipeline, and if so, would the willing seller principle be used in the determination of the market price should the land be expropriated? We've also heard from the Deputy Minister of Land Affairs at some point that market value may not necessarily be the price which could be given in the form of compensation, so I'd like you just to expand a little bit on that. The second question is to do with the closing comments about the inadequacy of the restitution budget in view of the fact that land prices have risen in value. Now, I've always struggled to understand this because every year 5% of available agricultural land comes onto the market. One can understand the department's prediction if there was a monopoly where people can set monopolistic prices and basically hold the department to ransom. The 5% of the available agricultural land in the country from many, many, many farmers, one would need to have a fairly advanced degree of paranoia if one actually thought that all these people are in some giant conspiracy on sufficiently setting prices. So I would suggest that since we have a near-perfect market in that particular industry, these land prices are reasonable. Surely then the solution is not to beat the sellers of the stick, but in fact to actually apply for a higher budget, which I personally would support. We did offer Deputy President this in the NCOP a year or two ago, and she assured us that every department, this was in context of the money we were then considering to bail out the body, every department had enough to meet their needs. So I would suggest you go back to Deputy President and say, can we not then give this department enough money so they can actually fund their restitution program? I'd like to be depending on that. And last teacher, my last question is about these land claims. We heard today that 93% of them have been settled. Looks like we're going to be protesting the rest of the time here, what some of the next members of the committee are saying. But I actually have a huge sense of frustration about this. But once again, we have a committee briefing, we get these glossy reports, everything is fine in the land of North Carolina. The reality out there is completely different. So if I take my own particular example from my constituency, I must admit everyone else's constituency, but I don't imagine that my constituency of Natal Midlands, or the Midlands of Midlands, is that different from anyone else's. Give you one example, there is a massive claim that cuts across the municipality of Umgani. It starts on the one side of the Carpenter's Road, incorporates three major developments where there's up to 2,000 houses that were to be developed in terms of the GSA process. It includes a farm which is one of the biggest avocado export farms in the country, very successful. Across the Umgani Valley, which is the second most special bioresource area in the whole of KwaZulu-Natal, and up to Hilton College on the other side. Now, the effect of this land claim, which was not actually apparent in 1999, various landowners, again in a press to the department in 2003, they were assured there was no claim. And guess what? In 2005, this land claim appears out of nowhere, dated the 28th of December 1998, 3 days before the cut-off period. And now, suddenly, thousands of people have lost their jobs. There was no development taking place. No houses can move. No one's prepared to risk money and capital into areas which are now subject to this claim, which is obviously a frivolous and a bogus and a fraudulent claim. Okay? So when I come to a committee meeting and I see that these things don't actually have any effect and we've created 1,108 jobs, not a figure I personally use those things about, I have to ask myself, what talent to be doing? Because thousands of people just in my constituency have lost their jobs because of a process which is fundamentally corrupt, which is known to be corrupt, is actually chasing investors out of my constituency, in fact, out of my country. So I actually want to know, have we not finally got to a point where the figure of 79,000 and some change claims is actually the figure? That after 10 years, we can now actually publish what the remaining unresolved land claims are. And that we don't have people who can't get work, who turn to crime in many cases as the only way they can live, and actually we can actually get on, invest with confidence, build our country, create jobs, and not have to worry about some land claims appearing under the woodwork, because for 10 years the department is telling us they don't actually know what the total number of land claims are, and they can't even publish a list, even in provincial or local form, as to what these land claims actually consist of. And this is about time that she closes for home.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me start off again with the technical side of the annual report. The first thing that I have to say is this year at least we got it on a CD well before the time, but it's sometimes very difficult to read the annual report on a CD. And we only received the printed version. I think was privileged to get one last week while we were taking Parliament to the people. But it is a very huge, large document and very, very user-unfriendly, the printed version. And it's very heavy also. I think once excess baggage goes up if you have one of these in your bag. But the report again was to me very difficult to link the actual strategy with the targets and with the budget and what was the outcome. So I found it very difficult. In some cases it was there, but not in some cases your strategy I was battling to find what you told us in 2006 and 2007 what you're going to do in your strategy document and try and link it with this document. Although sometimes I was lucky to get some of them. But it's a very difficult the document. It's very a large document. And one of the things that I picked up, this report has very little to say about the entities that's reporting to the Department of Land Affairs, especially the Land Commission. It's just made reference in general to the work of the Land Commission. whereas one would love to know what does the department think the performance of the Land Commission was in terms of the effectiveness, the impact, and how was it monitored. So I think in future they must look at that, that this annual report has a bit more to say about the entities that report to them. It also has no reference of the State of the Nation address. It also has no reference to the minister at that time, her budget votes in Parliament, in the NA and in the NCOP. No references made to those objectives that she said there. And then my favorite topic, the audit committee. Chairperson, again, it looks like there's a template that they have and they just change the thing. Every year it's the same. There is no difference. And the audit committee in main deals with the asset management of risk management of the department. And if you relate that to what the Auditor General is talking about, then one gets a feeling that there's a huge gap in that. So one would like the audit committee report to not just be a template, but a bit more substance to it, so that you can see what they're actually doing. Because I think all that changes is the members' names are changed in the day. That's basically all. Chairperson, but let me come to the more serious thing. Chairperson, if I can start off. They say in their annual report on page 129 that they're talking the slow phase of land delivery as well as the promote integrated development through a supply-led approach. Now, if you look at the areas where they did not perform and which they have on the screen here, then I don't think the supply-led approach is working. If they can just give us some comment on that. I'm glad that they've now clarified the thing of the special purpose vehicle that, because there's quite a lot on that, but they've clarified that they're not going to establish a new entity. They're looking in finding other means of doing that. But the thing that really worries me, Chairperson, and I think it's a bit misleading, if they tell us they have used 99% of their budget. If you look at the budget allocation for 2006-2007, the initial department appropriation was 4.85 billion rand. And it was reduced by 1.12 billion rand during the adjustment, estimate of lesser expenses. And they say due to the protective process of resettling outstanding restitution claims. Now, if you can recall, Chairperson, the previous financial year, they underspent by 1.05 billion rand. So, in actual fact, they underspent in 2 years 2.25 billion rand on restitution. It's no wonder they are not meeting the targets. This is now if I read their annual report. So to show us here, it's right, you did use 99.9% of your budget, but that is after the adjustment. That is not what was appropriate to them when we approved the budget. Chairperson, and that to me is a very serious issue. Very serious. What is also serious issue, by the way, they also have some donations, I think, from Belgium or somewhere, where they also underspent the money that was given to them as a present. So I found that a bit contradictory. But, Stephen, you see what I'm trying to get is that they underspent in two financial years 2 billion rand. We are never going to reach that target of 2040. That's the one thing, if they can just give us some detail on that. And this new project, the Kijama. Jefferson, I wonder if that's working. Because if you go onto the in your constituency, you talk to people, if they go to the department and they say, here I am, I got a couple of cattle, I'm looking for land. It takes still too long. In some cases, the one that I know of in the Northwest, after 2 years, they're still battling to it, although there is progress. So the progress on this, to try and shorten the process in time and to improve on the time, is not working. Can they tell us why is it not working? Because obviously, any farmer that wants to sell a piece of land can't wait for 2 years for the department to make up their mind. Say, yes, we're going to buy. Or the emerging farmer that wants to buy the land, he cannot wait 2 years before he knows what because life goes on. So the processes are still taking too long. Shepherds, let me first stop there because there are some other issues more than the financial side and some other things, so that I give other members also chance to ask questions.
Thank you very much.
And they also, they still have
the problem of certain kind of resources that you want to use in that particular time. The other question relates to the qualified office. And that's what it says, whether the department has its own internal auditor. Because if they do, I don't think that they can have a qualified audit, because they will have an understanding before that these are the problems that the department is facing. And the last is just to get the information from the department whether during the audit, by auditor general, are they part of that particular auditing session, so that they can be able to clarify some of the questions if they are asked in that particular audit. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm from Malimbongi, the Apayani Department. I'm seeing a progress and some slow progress. So I would say I'll comment where I'm seeing that they are moving. But I'm having a problem of challenges that they are having. I don't remember when was the land summit. And my colleague on my left-hand side was complaining about willing buyer and willing seller. When you were giving us the report, you are saying that the department still have challenges on land, willing buyer, willing seller. But I wanted to ask this question. We have said you do have a task team of the ministerial, and when these things are coming to us, I'm trying to check on the time frame. That land summit was a very urgent one, and we supposed to have something today that is saying it's not about the task team. We supposed to have something saying that this is ABC. So I'm a bit worried about that, just because that's the one thing that it causes this problem of delays. And then this thing of appointing the staff. So you cannot do 100% work whilst you don't have enough staff. And I don't know whether your strategies of trying to resolve this problem of staff, is it workable? When I was listening, telling us of appointing about 850 people, and then they do left because of internal posts and other things, I'm suspecting that you must revisit this. This is a big problem. You cannot achieve whatever goals you want to achieve if you do an organogram and you, for so many years you short of staff. Surely there's something which is wrong in your strategies and plans. You must go and revisit and check what can you do, or can you put more incentives in order that they must not go away, they must not resign, let alone it gets, let alone it posts that they are getting higher posts. But please revisit this. You cannot achieve, you cannot meet targets if you have a problem of staff. One other thing that I wanted to check in your program 7, if you can next time provide us with your information that you are saying you are bringing services closer to the people according to each register. We are still mentioning one province. We're presenting about 9 provinces. We do need that information. In one other what you call presentation, which like you were talking and I was impressed about hotspots that we are buying land for eviction farmers. But I'm having a problem when also you are saying that we are having challenges on the state land. What challenges? Are we not governing? If now you have a problem in your own land, how much more in the Emakosi land? I'm having a very serious problem on that. If you can tell me, what does that mean? If now as a government we have problems, challenges in our own state land, I don't know whether we are talking about this huge price or whatever, but in our own land, I can agree with you if we are talking about the Amakosi land or whatever, somebody's land, but not telling us about the state land. Did I say that I'm appreciating that we'll be getting that the land for hot spot, and then the oh, later I'll come back. Let me give other members to pay some.
Okay, I see.
That can I say that we did take Parliament to the people in the Stellenbosch. Maybe we'll be raising more sexual questions. I received this in my office this morning. Surely maybe this information was circulated whilst we were away from Parliament. But your summary vision, at least, it did give us what is in here. I'm echoing that sometimes we must get this document in order that any media person who's in this room must not go outside and say that we don't read, we have an exclusive. We are capable members, we can read, and we know what we want. So let's look at the documentation that they must read us in time. But your summary, it did assist us a lot. Thank you, Chairperson.
You are a member, Honorable Adam?
Yes, thank you very much. I want to thank the acting DG and his department for the report. Jefferson, my question was focused, I know some of my colleagues have alluded to it, but I just want more clarity on the support in terms of municipalities and in terms of the provincial housing departments and in terms of the housing departments. Land has been given back to beneficiaries, and there's a whole party and everything going around, the celebrations and all that, but at the end of the day, that beneficiaries wait 10, 15 years. If you look at Argument 66, Portia land, that type of thing, for people to move back into the land or for houses to be sold so that the people can move back. The problem with starting the 66 and all that, now political playboard, and the land has been got one of the, I think the first pocket of land that was given back to people. What is the department's terms, strategy, regarding support? First of all, how is your relationship with the Department of Housing, municipalities, supporting them, building houses for these beneficiaries, and support the beneficiaries? I've seen it start in the Eastern Cape. When will it be rolled out? I see it commenced in November, but when will it be rolled out to other provinces? Don't you think that if you approach National Housing Department, they've got the infrastructure with the local government to roll out all provinces at one stage? Because what happens is tomorrow these people are fed up and stigmatized and tired and they don't want to build houses anymore. And they just disappear because they have waited so long just to get back to the land to build a house and back in there. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
He is a basket full acting
genuine. Thank you very much, Your Worship.
overflowing basket. Thank you very much. And I will ask my colleague to answer specific questions. I will respond to the support questions. I mean, support by municipality is the last question. And I will ask to Shabani to respond to all the questions that relate to this program. So we'll to Ms. Buka, the commissioner, who is going to respond to the restitution, some of the restitution questions. And Derek will respond to the question of decentralization and opening new offices for all the LPI functions. And HR questions, answer to the finance questions, yes. Let us start with cases to the finance question.
Thanks, Jeff. The first question is the 4.85 billion that was received during the financial year. Jeff, I should inform the House that the way the budget is structured, in April we received 4.85 billion. But then during the medium-term policy statement, when we did our adjustment estimate, we gave back Treasury 1 billion. And the reason why we gave back 1 billion is it was because as a department we became prudent. We realized that some of the claims that had a developmental element were taking longer for the development to take place. The money that we gave back was not for the purchasing of land, but was more on the funds that were earmarked for development. It's not the acquisition money. Now, once the policy statement has been made, it becomes a revised appropriated budget. And it is announced publicly like what was done last week. Therefore, the budget that we reported at the end, it was the appropriated budget that was approved and we spent 99% of it. And as a department, I think we've done justice because we managed to spend exactly what we said we won't be able to spend. And that does not represent underspending for 2 years. The other question is that does the department have its internal audit? Yes, we do have an internal audit. Annually, when we plan for our audit, the AG interacts with the internal audit first to look at the 3-year internal audit rolling plan that we have, and they also look at the work that has been done by the internal audit. Based on the work done, then they are able to draft their own plan, taking into consideration all the areas that have been audited. And during the audit, we also form steering committees where the internal audit and the audit committee and the department sit together to look at the issues that have been raised by the AG. So definitely there is a committed working group between internal audit, the audit committee, and the department. I think those were the only two. The other one was on the annual report, which was not user-friendly. Yes, indeed, as a department, we have noted that, and there is work in progress to make sure that next year we produce a better report.
Thank you, I would like to respond to two areas. The question by Honourable Member Olifant in terms of the assistance that could be provided in terms of the training and the bursaries for the colleagues in spatial planning information. I think the purpose of that comment, we often get comments to say that there's a large number of youth that are unemployed that do want study opportunities. And this is an area where the department is really finding it very difficult to recruit the numbers of youngsters that we do need. And this is an invitation from the department to those youth to say, actually, we do offer bursaries, we do look for people, please approach us and apply for that. In the past few months, we've had a very extensive program nationally where we went to small places like Springbok and Kof Adder and so on to actually promote what the Department of Land Affairs is doing in terms of its core business to youth in those areas. So that's actually why we added that comment, to encourage the youth to apply for the bursaries and the other opportunities. The second comment relates to the recruitment process, and yes, the recruitment process in Land Affairs is a daunting process. but it's not only land affairs that is experiencing the challenges that we are facing. And what we are trying to project through the statistics that we showed, that close to 600 people have left for higher employment, be that in DLA, meaning that they've left new vacancies behind, or in other government departments. So there is a very large trend of job hopping in the public service at the moment, and that is a concern to most government departments around this area. And we are engaging with DTSA to help us to bring structure into the recruitment process so that we actually don't see I'm in a job for 6 months and then I apply again, and then 6 months later I'm in another job and I apply again. Because essentially we just create the cycle, and we don't have a stable human resource capacity in DLA. I think the positive around the recruitment process is that we have reviewed the recruitment process during November of last year, and the process has been completely re-engineered, where in the past it took us up to 6 months just to get through the interview process. We are now down to a process of about 43 days on average. So it's much quicker and much more effective than what we used to have. In terms of the statistics in the main report, we showed that we recruited 800 people through the whole course of the last financial year. Well, already this year, in October, the end of October, the first 6 months of the current year, we have already recruited 850 people, which means it's more than a doubling of the effort and the success that we are having for last year. So we start at the more senior level so that we can counter the upward mobility. So we started at, for example, the deputy director level to fill them. And whoever were to be promoted, were promoted. So then we exercise the next layer. So we are gradually moving down to the lower levels. And the target is, and I must admit it is a very steep target, is that by 31 March, the end of this financial year, we want to be at a 10% vacancy rate. And we are scared, but optimistic that we are going to make it, especially including the graduate project. We are going to bring in roughly 450 people. We've already advertised and we are in the process of recruiting them. So they should be on board by the end of January, which will already bring a very large number of staff into DLA. Thank you.
Just before you answer the other
Thank you, honourable members. These offices, and also very closely related to the Surveyor General's offices, are old, established offices. And so the areas of jurisdiction were defined still in the previous regime, the old areas of jurisdiction. And so they now have to relook at their new areas of jurisdiction. This is not an easy process because for two main reasons. For example, the deeds office. When you register a deed, there's a process what they call execute the deed. And this requires a conveyancer to be physically present at that office. So many conveyancers have established themselves around the existing offices. So if you have to move offices or locate offices in new areas, it would also affect the conveyancing fraternity. But it's most of the problems around decentralizing goes around the records. To process a deed, you do need to have the historical record of all the previous deeds. There's some deeds that are using microfilm as a process of storage, but the other deeds offices still have the physical documents. And these are stored in a numerical order. In opening a new office, you need to then transfer those records to that new office. And this is really the main funding block in opening new offices, is to separate the records out for the new office in its area of jurisdiction. So you define its area of jurisdiction, what land parcels fall in that area of jurisdiction, and then to access the records, copy them. The deed offices and the Surveyor General's offices are now engaged in a new project, but this will take a bit of time, and that is to make all their records electronically available. And once this is done, then obviously it will be a lot easier to separate and to move records around.
Thank you. So the offices are in Nelspruit, Limpopo, and those will be the new offices, in other words, move from Pretoria to Limpopo. We have talked about Nelspruit in this report, but we are thinking about other provinces as well, so that we move away from the four, the main four offices, which was Pretoria, Durban, Pretoria, Maritzburg, and Cape Town. So we want to move to the other new provinces in line with the new map now. Let me go to Tumi and take me to
thank you, DG, thank you, members, for the question. I will deal firstly with the question raised by Honorable Van Rooyen on the entity that report to Parliament, and with specific reference to the restitution report, the depth of the restitution report in the annual report. I think members will remember that in June we came here to present the restitution report, which actually went into more details about an analysis of the performance of the Commission on Restitution. Now, the Commission is part of the department, becomes part of this report, hence perhaps the level of detail that you are seeing now on this general departmental report. The second question that was raised is with regard to our use, or rather this was a recommendation as well as a question, that with regard to the remaining 5,000, why is the Commission not using expropriation? We do have cases that indeed have been identified as possible expropriation cases. Statistics are available in that regard. However, expropriation in its nature, it's provided for, as you will all know by the Act, that it's in its own, in the process of negotiation, if expropriation becomes an option. We do have cases where, in fact, some of the landowners get a change of heart as we go through the process and actually cause the Commission and negotiators even to retract from the negotiations, from the expropriation route, as now we all agree to come around the table. However, yes, there are cases and where the Commission is convinced that we have valid claims and we have cases that are valid in terms of prices that we are offering. Expropriation is a tool that we consider and endeavor to employ. With regard to the percentage, the percentage is reflected here in terms of our performance. Yes, indeed, that is where we are standing, according to the records now that are with us. We have gone through various processes of data cleansing, and this is the information that we can report now in terms of how we have performed regarding the settlement at 93, and with those just over 5,000 claims remaining. To say the list on the restitution process, on the claims process, it is often not easily possible at a particular point to confirm validity of a case. When a restitution case when a restitution claim is lost, the whole process of investigation, of research, has to take place before a claim can be gazetted. And before we can gazette a claim, it cannot be said with certainty that we're having a valid case. That's why after some time, after we have researched a claim thoroughly, we would then be in a position as a commission to come back and say, yes, indeed, here we have a claim which is valid. And one formal way of doing that is through gazetting. At this stage, it is very clear, even in terms of the Act, that we will not be accepting any new claims, and as a result, we cannot be anticipating to say to anyone or even any stakeholder or affected party that there are new claims emerging, which claims have not been lodged by the cut-off date. Just also to remember that the cut-off date was the 31st of December 1998, and we continued as a commission to receive claims up to 12 o'clock midnight of that day. So whether even those claims that were lodged 3 days before the cut-off date or 3 hours before the cut-off date would meet the requirements of the Act, because they would have been lodged before the actual cut-off date, and such claims are recognized as such and continue to be investigated for settlement, depending on whether or not, of course, they are found valid at the time of investigation. Yeah, Chairperson, I think those are the restitution claims.
Thank you, Chairman. The different honorable members asked one question around willing buyer, willing seller. One that is the commonly known view that the willing buyer, willing seller principle alone cannot achieve success in land delivery. And I think that is an accepted view, as was stated in the present State of the Nation address, to say it must be reviewed. The department has completed a review of the willing buyer, willing seller policy that has been followed by the department to date. We are now, in fact, yesterday, we started letting out a process now of formalizing policy around the willing buyer, willing seller principle, which will then obviously get into the public domain for discussion and public consultation before it becomes government policy. I think that's the best way that I can respond at the moment to that particular question. The related question was around the land permit resolution, or the land permit itself that took place in June 2005. I think in as much Chairperson, that there has been slow progress in the implementation of all the resolutions of the land permit, I can just highlight a few areas where there is progress that has been made around those particular areas, one being the area around the willing buyer, willing seller review that I said has been completed. Around the land check, the proposal on provision on land selling, the area of providing for an option that might still be considered, whether the state should have a right of first refusal as a means of intervention in the land market. That those proposals are on the table, part of the broader review of the willing buyer, willing seller. As I say, they are at a proposal level. We are now in the process of giving marching orders to start developing policies in relation to those, so that can then go to the public domain for discussion today before they become government policy, if they do become government policy. Policy on land ownership by foreigners, we have received a final report on that. We are aware of it. It has been also presented to the portfolio committee and cabinet. We are also talking about finalizing that policy. We've extended the consultation process for public comment up until the 14th of December. Given the interest around this particular issue and the emotions around it, in the land summit, we asked to look at developing strategies in line with the decentralization of land reform to local municipalities. Municipalities have developed what we call a land reform sector plan, which is your land reform area-based plans, which we are currently implementing in some parts of the country and hope to roll out in various provinces. Land permit also resolved for the state to have a direct role in the market. We since the beginning of last year, we developed the strategy on proactive land acquisition, which we started implementing last year. Hence, there is not much difference that is visible, because we only started implementing the strategy last year. We've reviewed our grants, our flags, our flag grants, our ELRAD grants. We have even developed new grants around full subsidies for farm dwellers. But all those will obviously be asking pending treasury approval. We hope that by the beginning of the next financial year, we'll have new land acquisition instruments other than ELRAD, flag, and collective land acquisition. There's an issue around the state land challenge. I think we have to be very honest with honorable members around this. The state is the biggest landowner in this country. And the state, I'm talking about not Department of Land Affairs, I'm talking about all the various spheres of government that own land. And we have not, as government, been the best land administrator, the best real estate agent. In that historically, some of these records were not known where they are. Some of this land remained unsurveyed. Some of it remained unregistered. One of the initiatives which we are required to do now by law is for every state department to have its own asset register completed. This is when we start coming across some of these challenges, when we have to physically verify these assets. And we find that this parcel of land belongs to the state, but it's not surveyed, it's not registered. We bring it to the register. Once you bring it to the register, you've got to make sure that you either decide whether you want to keep it, or whether you want to lease it, or whether you want to dispose of it. So it's all those things that we are dealing with. But I'm very proud to say that as the Department of Land Affairs, we are ahead of all other state departments in terms of finalizing our asset register, so that we'll have a fully comprehensive asset register come the 1st of April next year. That will tell us where is all land that is owned by the Department of Land Affairs, who is on it, on what basis. Are they paying rent? Are they not paying rent? Do we need to keep that land? Do we need to sell it? Do we need to make it available to municipalities for housing development? Do we need to give it to other state-owned enterprises for local economic development, and so on and so on. So we'll be in a better position to plan ahead with that kind of information. Honorable Oliphant asked the question about whether we have an internal audit unit. I was hoping that our CFO was going to respond to that. Indeed, we do. But this is the trick, Honorable Chair. Precisely because we've got to be proactive in terms of the interventions of our own internal audit unit, in terms of our risk management plan and our audit plan. Our audit internal audit unit goes out proactively and tries to identify limitations and gaps in our system. What inevitably happens is that once they've completed those studies, then the Auditor General comes and start looking at the report of our own internal audit, which we initiated as a department to try and improve our own system. Then we get qualification. We get qualification on our financial on the basis of our own information, on our own initiative to try and improve. So indeed, we do. So some of the information that led to the qualification, it came from the initiative of the department when we were trying to say, get our internal audit out there, let them have a look at what the problems are, what are the weaknesses in the system, where do we improve? And the Auditor General says, come bring that information, let me assess that information on the basis of that, then comes your qualification. So that is the kind of situation we are faced with. Before then, there was a question about proactive land acquisition not working and Kijima not working. Why is it not working? As I said, proactive land acquisition strategy, we only started implementing it last year. We've got about, currently, as we speak, close to 100 projects on our books to date.
But this is a new strategy. We can't just go out there willy-nilly acquiring, implementing this strategy without trying to test our own system, so that we make sure that by the time we fully roll it out, we have got all the checks and balances in place. Otherwise, we're going to have problems. So we've had our trial runs in the last financial year, the period under review. We are rolling it out this current financial year. We are trying to tighten up the gaps that we have identified in the strategy. Similarly, with Operation Kijima. Operation Kijima was only initiated in November 2006. So it may be a bit early to show all the results for the Kijima strategy at this present moment, but we are working on improving on that. Then there was the issue from Honorable Member Kambuk to say, surely there's enough land in the market. Why can't we just simply buy this land? I want to say two things. Indeed, there is, according to the information from the state agent, that 5% of land is in the land market on an annual basis. Like my colleague Anton van Zeren, who was talking about capacity in the department and the vacancies, you will find that in many instances, the land that may be out there and the offer that may be out there may be far outstripping the capacity that is available to deal with all of those at the same time. But at the same time, we cannot be singularly dependent on the willing buyer, willing seller approach, because we have seen the extent to which the land prices are escalating. I'll give you a practical example. Both the provincial Department of Agriculture here in the Western Cape and our provincial office have established that in the Western Cape alone, the average land price per hectare here is 110,000 rand. So if you look at the 30% target in the Western Cape, which is about the remaining, because we're about 10% in the Western Cape for land redistribution towards the 30%. So if we have to deliver the remaining about 700,000 hectares, on the basis of the 110,000 rand average price per hectare, the department would require 40 billion rand to meet the target in the Western Cape alone. So I think we have got to take these things quite cautiously, because as a state, we may find ourselves feeding to the runaway land prices. So we've got to be cautious about it. But we are also saying to enhance our own capacity. We have put a lot of emphasis in developing private-public partnerships, because we've realized that some of these deals are quite complex. We don't want to acquire land and find that land reform beneficiaries has inherited vineyards, very complicated value addition enterprises, and they can't handle. So we are emphasizing strategies around your public-private partnership to make sure that we don't only speed up delivery, but we've got a balance for sustainable, for sustainability beyond its land transfer. I thank you.
To conclude our response, let me start by saying that the reports that we have from our parliamentary offices, because we have given them these reports early, as soon as they were out of print from the machine. So they tell me that on the 10th week of October they distributed this annual report to members. So that is the information that they told us. I have asked them to deliver these things, and that they get something that is signed by your office, so that I don't have to answer this question again. So I would like them to give me a signed copy of what the delivery note, because they tell me that they gave these reports. We gave them as soon as they came out of the machine, and they said they delivered it on the third week of that's the response they give. The issue about the addictions in the KZN, we could give the committee the report that we got from KZN around the addictions, which outlines those types of cases. that we experienced these human rights violations that happened in Caverton. We could give you a copy of that report. Whether the policies are achieved, raised the question whether these policies are being we are achieving or not achieving. We have made significant progress, like DDG has outlined, that on the issue of willing buyer, willing seller, land tax, we have got draft documents which talk about the proposed inputs into the policy review. I can indicate that we will distribute those copies of those discussion papers to you to show the progress that we have made. The other question of whether we are going to move away from the market mechanism. No, this country has adopted the market economy as the approach, and we are getting the cue from the government. The government parliament has adopted the market economy as the approach that we are going to follow. So we are not going to drop the market economy. It's just that the manner in which it works, even in America, government intervenes. In Europe, government intervenes in the Western economies as well as the Asian economies now. Government intervenes. What we are saying here is that if things are becoming uncontrollable in the market and are working to the detriment of the population, of the citizens, the market needs to be guided about how that market should not work against its own citizens. So in this government, then, we have decided that we are not going to move away from the market economy. So is the case in the land market. If the prices are getting as problematic as they are, because they are affecting black and white citizens of this country, I have said in this parliament, committee, that here in Simonstown, I have spoken to Africana people. They are saying they can't buy property in Simonstown. That property is so expensive. They themselves, as Africana, I spoke to them in Simonstown. They are moving to Belleville, where they can at least afford a shelter. It's because they are saying that those prices there are affected by foreigners who are buying land in the Simonstown area, and therefore they cannot afford. So is the case in the whole coast of the East Coast in Eastern Cape up to KwaZulu-Natal. So if there is such development in the country, the land summit was saying, government intervene and protect your citizens. So this is the spirit in which we are saying that intervention is important in this regard. So on the question of the adequacy of the budget for land reform purposes, I think we have stated here in this report that we would like to get an increase and review of the funding for the land reform program so that we can be able to cope with the changes that are happening in the economy so that we can still achieve our 50% target. On the question of the Midland land claims, I think the language of frivolous land claims and corruption is an overstatement of what is happening there. Because the issue there is that when a claim, like the commissioner was responding here, when a claim has not been validated, research happened, and the popular judgment, which was by the Constitutional Court, as well as the Richterstag judgment, which was by the Constitutional Court, has proved that when many landowners have argued that people have been submitting claims that are not valid, the court has said these claims are valid. The people who have been a process of tenantization of farm dwellers in the country, dating far back beyond 1936, that the people who are living on farms are turned into tenants, labor tenants, on their own land. which has been occupied by their grand-great-grandparents for time immemorial. Those people have been turned into labor tenants. And most of the landowners say that, no, these people are labor tenants. They are not landowners. We have bought this land properly and we've got a title. And we're saying this is a misunderstanding of the registration process. We are not arguing that people got the land wrongfully. They have got the valid title deeds. They bought the land properly. But it's just that that land which they bought is the land which is the subject of the claim. And it must be restored to those people in the rightful way. This is what this new democratic government decided in 1994 when they first implemented restitution program and land reform program. It is in the implementation of that there are these challenges where some people will feel that this claim is not valid. In that particular province in KZN, this has been a common reason that was given, that these people are not the right to claim this claim. Evidence shows. I think I've got a case in Stenga area where one of those landowners there in the sugar industry has been arguing that they have got a paper from Shepstin, who was the magistrate then, reporting to the Queen in the 1800s. In that one pager, it was saying there were no black people in Stenga. Stenga is this area where the president was this week, to where there is this Albert Luthuli Memorial. You cannot believe that in Stenga, up to Greystown, there were no black people. But there was this document which was saying there was no black people in that area. We have, and this is the King Shaka Monument area. Now, if people are going to produce that paper from Shepstone reporting to the Queen in England, saying that there were no black people in that area, we have got evidence from the, and these native commissioners were ten happy to write to Greystown here, that there are blacks who are resisting the removal. So we got evidence of those letters. The second type of letters is the letters that are written by the native commissioners who are saying, these people are refusing to pay tax, and these are the names. This is how we have verified those people are there. Now, to get someone who's saying that they were not blacks, they weren't the native commissioners, has written down to say that they were, and then believed the story that there were no claims there, those claims are frivolous and vexatious. It's something that we do not accept. We have lost those papers in court, and we think court can decide on this matter. Our own view as a commission is that these claims are valid, and there were people who were removed. We use every archival research, but also evidence from graves and other remains from those people. So to me, what I'm saying is that this government is saying that those people who feel that they have not been treated fairly and feel that the claim is vexatious, they can go and argue in court, and we are willing to go to court. We have gone to court in Limpopo, in KZN, and we can argue in court. So in this case, our emphasis is always that development that happens on the land must actually benefit the people in that area. It must not benefit only those people that were historically advantaged in those areas. So I'm saying that is our approach generally in this. On the last question from the Honorable Adam, we do have cooperation agreements with some of the municipalities. It's just that it takes longer. For example, in the area of KwaZulu-Natal in Katumana, we have reported to you that the municipality of Ethekwini complemented our restitution awards with the housing grant, and that resulted in a better product. And in those municipalities, the city in Limpopo, it has led to a good cooperation even with the resettlement. But the challenge around this is the alignment of the program. If we settle a claim now, the municipality may say, we don't have a budget for housing for these people. Even here in District 6, we settled this land claim some time ago. There has been about 40 hectares that we have identified for this. But the challenge there is that there are people who do not believe that this land should be given to the people. We've got cases where, for example, Caltex and others believe that land should be given over for other development other than the district. and we are working with the municipalities. The challenge, but we are on top of that. We have approved the phase two of the construction of housing in the district. And that project can accommodate 4,000 housing units. And we've got about 1,500 verified claimants who are going to benefit from the housing development in District 6. And the rest will be land fund beneficiaries that will benefit from that project. So they said, in short, we do have a plan to cooperate with the municipality. It just takes place, it takes different shapes from one municipality to the other, depending on the leadership of that municipality in each province. So that sums the response. Sorry, it took longer.
Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Conroy.
Thank you, Chairman. I just want to correct something. That the acting CFO explained to us. And I invite the members to go to page 130 of the annual report. 1.3.
Can we have that mic?
If you read what is standing there, one budget allocation for 2006-2007 financial year, the explanation that we got that is for development purposes only. It says that, but it's also for settlement of claims. It's very clear that it was for the settlement of claims and not only for development. But that doesn't make it better. That is, they didn't use the money because it was for development. It even makes it worse. If that money was in actual fact used for development, some people would have benefited out of it. So I want the members to read that because that is not what has happened. It was for the settlement of rural claims. And claims and for development. So I just want to correct that. Chairperson, and then the issue of the supply-led approach. I think the department has alluded to that, but I'm still not convinced that the supply-led approach is the one that's working. Because if you take a willing buyer, willing seller approach, that implies that it's a supply approach, supply-led approach, because land comes onto the market without other than commercial things for it. So that is the supply, the demand. But if it is demand-driven, because I think we must start now, because we're not going to make the target of 2014, we must start now looking at the demands of the people out there. The people want land. And if we keep on just supply-led, we are not going to make the target. So, and the willing buyer, willing seller is a function of supply. There's a land comes on the market and you buy it. It's a supply. So that's just how I see. Even the 5% of land that comes on a yearly basis, it is not the function of government, it is a commercial exercise, it's a supply. So if you look at what the people want on the ground, then it becomes a demand-driven thing, and I think we will have better results. But my question is that somewhere I read, and I couldn't find it, that the expropriation bill is being developed by the Department of Public Works, if I'm not mistaken. I couldn't find it again here. I just want to find out, although it's not the department is not dealing with it, but what is the progress being made on the appropriation bill? Then, a chairperson, a thing that was raised by the President in the State of the Nation is reference to the Communal Land Rights Act of 2004. What progress has been made there? Because is that court case still there, and what progress, because that is the issue that has been raised a lot of times. So if you can just have some indication on that. Shepherd, can I then just go to the asset management? That's on page 134 of the annual report, paragraph 11. They say comprehensive asset verification was conducted twice during the year. But now, if you compare what the Auditor General is saying, they have tested some of these things, and 60% of it was wrong. That is why they got a qualified audit report. So, what the department is saying here is in contradiction what the Auditor General says. Although the department has complied with minimum requirements, so obviously then the minimum requirements is too minimum. They have to there's a contradiction, and I think they need to look at that. On the basis of the qualified opinion, I would say that 60% of the samples that was selected by the Auditor General was wrong. They couldn't verify it. So it contradicts to what the department is saying here. Can I just then a financial question is, let me just get to that side. Because I have to make focus tests from the CD to read this before I go to this. The deficit was 163 million rand, according to the income statement. If you can just clarify that, because they talk about the 99%. And it's actually 163 million rand, and not 4.7 million. To just clarify how that amount is made up. What I found quite interesting is that the performance awards was reduced from 4 million to 2 million. Was there no performance by the department? So can just tell me why have they reduced the performance awards all of a sudden? Because all other departments is increasing performance awards, but the Department of Land Affairs is reducing it. Chairperson, 98 million rand for consultants is still too much. Although it was 96 last year, so it's not much, it's marginally the same, but it's still a lot. The one that I found quite interesting is the operating lease. I'm not sure what that means. If I can just clarify that, because that increased from 6 million to 34 million. I'm not so sure what does that mean. And then, again, the travel and subsistence is increasing yearly. And as far as I can notice from SAA, the tariffs are not increasing at the same rate that the department is increasing their travel. So if you could just explain to that. And for that matter, also the entertainment from 2 million to 3 million. There's quite a lot of entertainment. If you could just give us some explanation on that. A figure that I picked up which was quite interesting to me is the motor vehicle guarantee. Now that is to do with subsidized vehicles as far as I understand. Now a subsidized vehicle in my understanding is a tool of the trade for most of the people. Why are you giving people less cars? What are they now using to travel to do their work? Thank you, sir.
Thank you. That we can take. I'm also having a series of questions, and it means I'll have to reserve them. Let's have the response.
Thank you, Chair, for your consideration. I will ask my colleagues to respond to this. But let me clarify on the supply letter approach that we were talking about the proactive land acquisition strategy, which would assist these people before they come. This weekend we were in Grahamstown. We bought land for the farm dwellers, and they had not they had not approached us with an application, but instead with complaints about the condition of farm. If the demand-led approach has caused for the delays for all of these 12 years that we've been there running, because we've got to wait for people to come, and those people demand like the 001 economics letter will tell you, demand must be supported with ability to buy. You cannot demand and not be able to buy. Now, that ability to buy was not there because of the grant system. You need our grant system was such that you needed more people to be able to buy. In this case, in Eastern Cape, it was only 7 households that were there, and they would not have qualified to get. In other words, they would not have been able to support their demand until we had to review the policy. And the review policy is that would have a 100% grant, not taking into account the number of households that must be there. So, in other words, we have to change the approach instead of wait for people to be enough numbers for the size of grants to be able to buy any farm. The more we use the grant system, the more we're unable to buy land because of the increasing prices. So in terms of our own definition, we may differ in interpretation, but it was our understanding that the supply approach would mean that we buy land even if people are not enough in numbers to be able to make the grants that enable them to buy the land. So the supply-led approach is the plus, the proactive land acquisition strategy, and we think it's going to work actually, compared to the demand approach, which has not worked for all of these years. The issue of the yesterday we were meeting with the DG of Public Works to discuss this expropriation bill, which is run by that department. They have made the draft of the bill, revised the draft of the bill based on inputs. They have even presented this to cabinet to say what are the elements of this revised expropriation bill. They were referred back to make certain amendments to consult further, and they are now going to come with the revised draft of that expropriation bill. It's a program which is not, it's a legislation program which is not driven by us, but we're making a significant contribution in that process. On the Clara one, the case is still in court, and we are not having any problems with that. The court process is following its own route. But the court case does not mean that we cannot implement Clara. We are in the process of finalizing the regulations. We cannot have a rollout of the Clara implementation without the regulations. The regulations relate to all the details such as the right inquiry to say which land parcel to determine the outer boundaries in terms of the clause are going to go to who in that area. So we are in the process of finalizing those Clara regulations after which we could be able to implement Clara as the president directed in this one. The issue of the travel subsistence and entertainment increase, this I think we must be very realistic in this case. We've got the increase in the number of staff. The number of staff that we have are not the same number that we had last year. And as they travel to communities, we capture those and the cost will increase because of the increase in the number of staff, but also the increase in rates in hotels and in petrol
and all of those, because the revised transport, Department of Transport revises the rates according to the changes in petrol prices and all of that. And in my view, with the increase in the number of staff and the inflation rate that is there, this increase to me is a reasonable increase. But it's a subject of interpretation. I think Casey can respond to the other technical questions on asset management, on the deficit, on the performance hours. But I can even handle that one, because I know that last year in the department we have never aligned our performance standards to the performance assessment. And we did this rigorously last year. And in terms of the scale of the award of performance bonuses, most of the people, we did the performance reviews, most of the people felt under three. Three means that you have done good enough, you have already been paid performance bonus, and you have not done excellently in the job, so there is no need for financial payment of that recognition of good performance. We pay performance bonuses when people are above 3, 4, and 5. Our scale is 1:5. So most of the performance was regarded as acceptable and good. So most of the people did not qualify for performance bonuses. So that may be the reason, the explanation for this period here. When people done the question that is asked there is, what did you do which was extraordinarily significant in your performance that you deserve a performance bonus? And when that question was asked, it meant that fewer people were in 4 and 5. Casey can deal with the other.
Thanks, Chair. I'll start with the issue of the 1 billion, and I'm glad that the Honorable Member brought our attention to that page 130 in the annual report, which gives more explanation in terms of why the 1 billion. And I think our response is still valid. So if you look at that response, it actually shows that the initiative taken by the department in giving that the billion was very prudent. And there were valid reasons why we had to do that. The second one on asset management, if you look at the comments from the AG, they refer to the period 2020-2023. And if you look at the comments that we have put under the accounting officer's report, we have stated that, yes, we have complied with the minimum, but then we are still continuing to correct the register. Now, with the AG, if you have done work, and the work is not in terms of what they are supposed to audit, they won't reflect it as such. They acknowledge the fact that there is a theoretical register that has been developed. But then what remained was to go into the asset register itself, update it with the information that has been captured. And I think we've made it clear that we are still capturing information for 2002-2003. We reported assets worth 32 million in 2002-2003. And that's what they are also showing in here and talking to the fact that that information is not yet updated in the asset register. Therefore, the bare minimum that we are talking about is the recording of order numbers and invoice numbers against those assets. And we have clearly stated that for that particular year, we haven't done that. And I think the record speaks for itself, because if you look at the previous years, we never had issues with regard to asset management. Our programs still remain those of the first stick on when we started with asset management. In terms of consultants, I think that has our increase is even less than 20%. If you look at the work that we have to do and the speed at which we have to run and the expertise needed for land reform and compared to last year, you see a lot of consistency. And this is also in the nature of the work that we need experts to do certain functions in the department. Travel and subsistence, that includes accommodation, air travel, rental of cars, the S&T that is paid. I'm not sure about the increase in SAA, but we need to look at the bigger picture to say, given the excitement of 2010, also accommodation has gone up. And as a department, for us to be able to reach some of these targets, we really have to go out there and meet our stakeholders. Entertainment is very minimal. It's about a 2% increase from 36 to 38. And that entertainment is not about taking people to restaurants. It's more the catering and the workshops, the food that we provide for workshops and training in the entertainment. And in terms of our score allocation, entertainment covers also the celebrations that we do out there when we do resettlement of some of the things. Thanks. The operating lease. Just to unpack operating leases, we have our machines, your photocopiers and lease machines, and also we have buildings that are leased through public works. So that will constitute operating leases.
Sorry, can I
state guarantees have got nothing to do with subsidized vehicles. Those are motor vehicle guarantees, are guarantees that we give to officials who want to purchase cars. National Treasury gives those guarantees in their money. Then you have subsidized cars that we buy as a department for officials to be able to do their work there. So those two are different. Guarantees relate to SMS members who need to obtain cars but they cannot get a collateral from for them to be able to purchase. So we do provide subsidized cars
And that is related to DPSA and rules from transport treasury. So it is not for this department, it's a government-wide practice.
Thank you very much.
The other spending of 114 million?
If you look at the financial performance statement, it talks to the total revenue received, the amount appropriated. It will be different from your just appropriation and the savings. So the statement of performance will always be different to your appropriation. So we don't account for the same thing. The 163 is the difference between the revenue that you have received and the expenditure.
I'll talk to her.
You'll find it very
helpful. Okay. Honourable Compo, do you want to? Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm glad we're also able to engage the department in robust debate and questions while we still can. So I don't want to ask you questions, I just like my original questions answered. I had an answer I didn't like, one that said there wasn't an answer, the third one wasn't answered at all. So let's go back and try and interrogate these things because the department seems unwilling to answer them. I must say I find it very difficult to try to cope with the next messages. The acting DG spoke about the commitments of the government to the market mechanism and has proceeded to list a whole lot of qualifications that actually totally undermine that very concept. That's fine, but what I think we should realise, we should take cognizance of, is that the Deputy Minister himself actually told us in a briefing in the NA, Joint Committee or Third Incident Committee, that in fact the market mechanism was not going to be a mechanism whereby land expropriation would necessarily be handled. So that very clearly, there is other ways to value land other than by market prices and market-related prices. But I'm not quite sure why there's this differentiation between what you get from the Deputy Minister and from the department. You may remember, Chairperson, you co-chaired that meeting with them. I don't know what's changed, but I do find it problematic that we're not getting the same answer depending on when you ask it and who you ask it to. My question about these claims, on this page here, with this very useful graph, the heading talks about cumulatively we have settled 74,417 claims out of D, and it uses the word D, which is the definition of article. 79,696. So the implication is there are 79,696 claims. With respect to, I didn't ask which of them had been gazetted. I didn't ask how much or how many of them had been settled. I simply asked, is that figure now cast in stone? In other words, is that figure the number of claims that have been lodged? I understand that many of them may not have been gazetted. But what I'm trying to get to, the question I've been trying to get to for 5 years now, an answer to this question, is that the final figure? Period. Are there any more claims?
And if that, in fact, is the final figure of claims that have been submitted, then surely by now we should get a list of which ones are still to be settled. After all, there's only 5,122. Surely we can end the speculation about whether this particular piece of land is going to be furnished a land claim or not. A very simple question. Okay. Now, on the fraud aspect, I want to come back to Mr. Shabani's answer. I wasn't referring to the actual claimants themselves. What I'm referring to is the process by which people go around very deliberately concocting claims, approaching the department and getting the department to backdate the claims. That's why I relate to this particular figure. I want to know whether this can continue, whether in fact we are going to be stuck on 79696. And that is not an accusation I made. So the question was put to this committee about 2 years ago, and I don't remember who it was that answered. You confirmed very specifically that that was a problem that the department were grappling with. And we congratulated him at the time for his honesty in admitting there was corruption within the department. And there are people that actually, you know, use the term farm out, land claim. Okay, now, it's a good question, well, it's a relevant question, because if that is not to put a stop to, and isn't a list, then it's called into question what that 5122 is actually made up of. So again, this is not me being difficult. This is actually what the department themselves have identified as a problem and admitted to us as such 2 years ago. And it might very well be, and I agree with that, with the deputy DG, there might very well be cases where people put in legitimate claims. But the fact of the matter is it's actually put together by someone who's come well after the event, in some cases years and years after the event, and it's getting a cut from it. Someone who actually should not be benefiting from this process. We are trying to actually deliver to the people that are marginalized and being dispossessed, not to the people that care enough to drive around in their flashy cars and put in claims that actually were, that should have been put in before the cut-off date, but actually doing it to enrich themselves. That's what's wrong about the process, and that's the answer that was concerned to us before. Now, I want to just finish off with this point about the market mechanism and the land that's available. I don't know whether the 110,000 rand per hectare, I think that's what the figure was mentioned, the Western Cape, is representative of the whole country, but so you did actually talk about, you talked about an average. So I would imagine that 110,000 rand per acre, or hectare, sorry, is comprised of figures that are around about there, some that are less than it, and some that are more than it. I don't think anybody who's got the welfare of the country at heart, and taxpayers as well as everybody else, is actually seriously suggesting that we should in fact go and only buy the most expensive land. But surely in the 5% of the land that comes into the market every year, there are going to be some pieces of land, some parcels of the land, that is below that average. And if we talk about the fact that 30% of the land has to be transferred, and we've only got up to 4% so far, that's less than 1 year's supply. One would have thought after so many years, if even if we'd only taken the one quarter of that 5% every year, we should have been a lot further than we are by now, and we could have got it at reasonable prices. But the problem I have with the department's answer is that they're saying two things simultaneously. They're saying, we're not abandoning the market mechanism, and our country is based on that, but. And when you add up all the buts, and you hear what now is being answered, what they're actually saying is we can't afford to buy the land, okay, at these prices that come onto the market. And if we're not prepared to pay those prices, how else are we going to get this land unless it's by expropriation? And if we're not going to be paying market-related prices, we are in fact going to be taking land at below what it's really worth. And that's my problem, because at the end of the day, when you raise these objections and you conclude that you can't make use of even a part of that 5%, you are actually talking about dispossessing people from the land who might have bought it after 1994, and you're going to pay them less than what it's actually worth. And that is the question that's driving everybody into panic in this country. That is why we don't have capacity. People are leaving because they are scared. And it actually is a Zimbabwean situation. And I would like a straight answer on this. If it's not market related, then what is it?
Create some space for the department to do some further research to reply to the question. Because the Honorable Conrad was also not very happy, and the Kromba was not happy. Maybe if we create space, I think you have to get down the question. They could reply in writing. You know, like he's saying, his memory is so good, he's calling 2 years ago, things which were said, and he's comparing with what has been said now. There are contradictions. Maybe that's the line we could take now.
Yes.
That is the fragment you can find, like, to the questions of Honorable Andrea.
Work it through the system.
Working it through the federal system. Because time is not with us now. But I see the end.
Honorable Chairman, indeed, we would be grateful to have that opportunity. But I think it would be extremely dangerous for us to leave this house without having responded to this question that suggests that in our responses we are hiding the fact that the state is now on a path of bankruptcy. Because you don't want the public to start getting that perception, which is totally incorrect. I think the minister has always said it, and the president have always said it, that we are going to implement land reform within the framework of the Constitution of the Republic, in terms of Section 25 of the Constitution. Now, the issue that is being raised around whether or not the state can afford, indeed we must say that all the year, the approach that we have solely relied on in land acquisition is willing buyer, willing seller. But we are saying the provisions of Section 25 of the Constitution are far broader than that. The Constitution is saying you've got to consider a whole lot of sectors, which of which market value is just but one. That is what we are saying. And we are saying within the framework of the Constitution, our intervention must be such that it does not compromise the rights that are protected by the very same Constitution and the Bill of Rights. So there is no question that the state is saying because land prices are unaffordable, we are going to grab land. I don't think there's something of that sort. We have to say that for the record. We are bound by the Constitution of the Republic. Even if we did expropriate, the Constitution is also very clear in respect of what framework the department should follow. As a matter of fact, that is one of the reasons why the Expropriation Act of 1975 is being reviewed to be put in line with the Constitution so that we don't infringe upon the rights of South Africans in the process of the Constitution. But there is an imperative for the state to intervene in the land market, like it happens everywhere, within the framework of the law.
Let me thank you for this. My interaction, this was my first interaction as the acting DG in this committee, and I can see the robust discussion and the level and depth at which the committee members have gone into the report. It's highly appreciated. We like it because it gives us guidance so that we can do better in our performance. I must say that there may be areas where there are issues of differences in interpretation and understanding more than the adequacy of the responses in some of the areas. For example, in this issue of backdating claims in the Office of the Commission and in the Office of the Department, I do not recall where we have said that there is a backdating of cases which have been accepted. In cases where we have seen that, I remember vividly, in Limpopo there was a case where there were some claimants who were trying to bring in their claims through the back door. We have rejected all of those claims where the people were trying to sneak their claims. One case was where the claimant was saying they submitted the claims in Limpopo in Pulukwana office in 2003. And we tested and tried to test what they were saying.
we found that we told them that in Pulukwana there was no Land Claims Commission office, because that office was based in Pretoria since 1995 up to 2002, when we decided to split the offices. So if they are saying they lost the claim before 1998, and they lost that claim in the Pulukwana office, that was enough for us to say, you are a liar, go. So we have dismissed about 500 claims in the commission which do not meet the acceptance criteria. I have discussed with the Transparent Agricultural Union. They have raised this argument of these claims that were brought in behind backdoor by the backdoor. And we have reassured them over and over and over again that the processes that we follow in the commission of acceptance criteria, we follow them religiously. That's why I told them that we have dismissed almost 600 claims that do not meet the acceptance criteria. We follow a very due process when we look at the acceptance of claims. So this issue of repeating this wrong view that there are claims that are accepted through the backdoor, it will continue to be there. But our answer is the answer that we have repeated over and over again, that in the commission we do not do that. We follow a particular process. So if people repeat that and want to take that as their view, there is no amount of response from us that will answer that question. So the other question is, in the redistribution program, which was run through the Willing Seller, Willing Buyer program, we have seen that there is marginal land that has gone to the people, because those who are owners of the land that becomes available to the market happens to be marginal land. Some of those people who want to sell it because they are not making it in farming, they want to exit. But through restitution in particular, it's not the case, because it's a rights-based program. That's why we're able to buy land at 55,000 rand per hectare. We were not able to do that here in this province, because it was, most of it was redistribution. And because of redistribution, the government decides whether to buy or not. But in restitution, we are forced to buy because that claim is valid, therefore we must buy at whatever price, such as I've indicated, at 55,000 rand per hectare. So I'm saying, because of restitution, we have bought high-value land. But it does not mean that we will buy only the expensive land. We buy any land that will address the land reform questions in the country. To me, I'm saying, Chair President, we will be able to meet this, some of the requirements of the nation around land reform if we all work together and hold our hands together. There will be challenges. We cannot wish the challenges away because they are there. It's the nature of the program. So we've got to deal with those and grapple with those challenges together. From my side and the team, I would like to say thank you very much, Mr. President, for your guidance.
Thanks, Chair. Just one last intervention, and then if the department don't want to answer, that's fine. You've already indicated that there will be a process and they can respond in writing, which I'm equally happy with, as long as there's that interaction. I just want to correct the misconception that this is a process of spreading rumors and trying to create perception. My job, and I would imagine everyone, honorable members around here, is to represent our constituents. Okay? These are widely held perceptions in the community. When a farmer, I've got many farmers in my constituency, tells me he's checked out over a period of 6 or 7 years through the normal channels whether he farms under a land claim. And every time the answer comes back a categorical no, and then 9 years later, he actually has a land claim, suddenly out of nowhere. There's no other reasonable conclusion to draw other than there's something funny going on. Now, I didn't create that position. It's not my farm, and it's not me who's the farmer. But that's what happens, and it happens a lot of times, and they draw the necessary conclusions, and the community believes it. That's what the problem is we have to address. Not to shoot the messenger and say the members here, the honorable members, are creating the perception. We are reporting back to the committee and to the department about the perceptions out there so that can be addressed. My last point about the, you see, I mean, Mr. Shabani and the AG, the acting DG, sorry, have answered. They try to explain how you can't actually buy the land. therefore we must actually possibly consider expropriation and other mechanisms. I don't put words in their mouth, I'm trying to summarize what they said as an alternative. But that also must be subject to the Constitution. So it's a circular argument, Shepard. And I'd like this to address them to address this when they respond to us in writing. If you don't buy the land at market rate prices, and then you consider other options like expropriation, but at the same time you say we're going to do it in terms of market principles and in terms of the Constitution, and therefore expropriation of taxpayers will be at market value. The answer that you get back from everybody in the community is, well, why don't you just buy the land? Because you're actually then going to be paying the same price anyway. So why go to the trouble of expropriation? We can avoid all that legal process, all that waste of time and money, and simply buy the piece of land that you would have got and that you would have had to have paid if you expropriated at market prices. And the fact that the department is prepared to do the expropriation route makes people think that they aren't going to get market prices, and that's why that perception exists. And that's what has to be addressed, because the argument doesn't hold water. Why go through legal process and expropriation to pay a price that you could have got on the open market anyway? And that's why people don't believe the department, and that's why they believe the word, because they're not actually giving us a straight answer.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think the rules are going taken was really to avoid, if possible, even the expropriation. You know, the reconciling process of South Africa is taken out. Trying totally to avoid even expropriation. So that there's understanding and consensus in land redistribution in this country. And the question of grabbing land, I think, doesn't exist at all in our constitution. That should be very clear, that land cannot be grabbed. But I think it's an ongoing process that has to be engaged with, you know, with those who have land and those who do not have land. But otherwise, I think I must thank the members, I must thank the department. This is an issue, ongoing issue that has to be addressed. We know all that land is a burning issue. Those who have land have their own concerns, and those who do not have land have also their serious concerns of what is happening, how is this government going to intervene in between people who have land and people who do not have land. It's a really a matter of concern that has to be looked at. We understand that the department is dealing with a very complex issue. This is a very complex issue. You wanted to come in, Honorable?
Yes, Chair. You recognized me and then you cut me off after Honorable Kambo. But yeah, I mean, if we need to be honest, we need to say thank you to the department for their honesty today. I think in my term now in this committee, in 2004, the first time that we had this robust debate in relation and dialogue in the committee, and really that the department has really been honest with us. Thank you very much for that. And I just want to quote and tell the Honorable Kambo, working as one to grow a better tomorrow, you should just pass this message on to Honorable Alan Zeller.
Thank you very much. I think, members, you have really interrogated the subject, and the department also endeavored really to come up with answers. But it's an ongoing. Their report is the